Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies, and clearly I yap about them too. My pronouns are he, him, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
And my name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
Yeah, yes, you are.
Don't want to forget that one. Very important.
No. So, welcome to another edition of Thunderdome. I kid. I had to say it. I've been waiting 2 years to say that. But in all seriousness, welcome to the 400th episode of Spoiler Peace Theater.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, wait, sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. Excuse me.
You had to keep the, you know, the curmudgeon train rolling.
I know, so, but I didn't I didn't want to shout it this time, though. So I did a modified boo.
Yeah. I like the modified boo.
Thank you.
So because it is our 400th episode, that is, holy shit, that is such a milestone. That's amazing. Yeah,
it's a BFD.
It is a BFD, like the BFG, but BFD. So we are switching things up for the week because it's a special episode. So we wanted to do things a little bit differently. We have lots of special guests who will be joining us, and we have some really special announcements too. Mm. So first things first, over on our Patreon, this week we cover The Wicker Man. And every week we release bonus episodes that are exclusive audio for our patrons. But this week we are making the Wicker Man episode available to everyone for free as a thank you for all of your support and for all of you listening, and also to give a taste of what our patrons get to listen to. So we wanted to make that available to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
I love that you guys are already psyched about it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So for the main show this week, we usually review new films. We usually do three new films. We're not this week. We're going rogue. Instead of reviewing a new film, our original co-host, Chris Jensen, is going to be joining us. Woo. And he chose the film High Noon to talk about because it's on AFI's list of top 100 films. And we're going to talk more about why he's into the AFI list, and we'll be discussing that film when he joins us a little bit later. And then later in the show, previous guests and friends of the show are going to join us, which is super exciting. And it's super exciting. Chris is here. We're just excited about everything. Mm-hmm. But the guests that are joining us, they're going to be talking about spoilers in film, and we'll get more into what they're going to be discussing in more detail at that part of the show. We have a really, really big, exciting announcement that we finally have released merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
Yahoo!
Woohoo! You can get your Spoiler Peace merch. You can represent the show. You can drink from a mug. You can wear a t-shirt, get a bag, all of that jazz, and share with all of your friends and tell them what a great podcast we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. By the way, I want you to congratulate me on my restraint for not saying represent. After you did, just so you know.
I was kind of expecting it, actually.
Yeah, I know. Special episode, so I'm only interjecting a third of the time this time.
The restraint that you must be exerting is incredible. Yeah. You deserve a cookie after this. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
But yeah, the merch is really exciting. It's going to be available mm-hmm. over on TeePublic. We're going to share links on our social media. But you can also find on our website, there's actually a link to merch, and we'll take you right to our TeePublic store so you can get all that good stuff that Megan mentioned. Notebooks, pillows, mugs, stickers, magnets, t-shirts, hoodies, all that good stuff.
The works. And we're also going to be incorporating it somehow into the Patreon tiers. We're going to be reconfiguring them. Not exactly sure how that's going to work yet, but good things to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the last announcement we have is that going forward, we are still going to be reviewing new films. We are all about those new films, but we're going to have guests join us. We want to incorporate more people. We love having people on the show, but usually we have people on kind of filling in case one of us is on vacation or unexpectedly out. And instead we wanted, there's so many great people in the podcasting and film community that we wanted to include more of them on our show. So approximately once a month or so, we're going to have a guest join us to talk about a new film. So we're really excited about that too.
Yeah. Super psyched. That's going to
be, sweet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be so much fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I'm not even going to make a joke about it. That's just going to be fun.
It's just so good on its own. It doesn't deserve a joke.
Yeah.
So guys, because it's our 400th episode, I am dying to know if either of you have any thoughts about this milestone.
Evan.
Yeah.
Start it up.
Man, I mean, first of all, I'm just blown away by it. Like, it's amazing that we've hit 400 episodes. And I just want to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners who've supported us over the years. But I also want to say a huge thank you to my wife, Shauna Harris. She's, you know, my biggest supporter and fan of the show. And she's right there with me watching movies every week and just supporting the show in so many ways. And say a huge thank you to all my friends and family who support the show. And, you know, it's exciting and it's just so much fun to do. And it's that much more fun knowing that so many people tune in every week and listen to the show. And then I just want to say thank you to both of you because you make the show so fun week after week. And I know some weeks it's tougher than others to get to all the movies. We all have things going on. So I want to say thank you to both of you and to 400 more episodes. I can't even believe I've been doing this show for over seven, almost 8 years. It's really exciting and fun. And I'm looking forward to all the new, you know, the announcements and changes and all that good stuff.
Wow, well said.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even going to say anything. Just what Evan said. You know?
Ditto.
No. Yeah.
No way. I want to hear what you have to say, Dave.
Okay, sure. I just wanted to say, I can't believe we've been doing this for almost 8 years, which you just said, Evan, but I had been trying to get a podcast off the ground for a while. And then through the Boston Online Film Critics Association, I can't remember whether you told me or whether Chris told me that you both were looking to start a podcast and you wanted a third person. And I was like, ha ha. And so, we did a few test episodes and then we started it. And we used to edit, we used to record on one mono track with my mixing panel that I think I bought in 1989 with lawn mowing money. So we have considerably upgraded since then. And the show has also, so many milestones have come through here. I turned 40 when we were doing the show. Both of my kids were born, but my first kid, I had to leave an episode right as we were about to hit record because he decided to arrive then, which was just like, kind of, if you know him, that's kind of what he's like. He's like, hey, excuse me. I need to butt in here. And I have really enjoyed having an outlet to just talk freely about movies and have no one give me a hard time for saying that, you know, and his wife did it at the end because I used to write for a large international news organization and I used to get hammered by not just my editor, but also just commenters like, I can't believe you gave the way of whatever. And even though I'd put the big spoiler warning. So anyway, it's great to have this outlet. It's great to have the two of you. Megan, it's been so much fun since you've joined the show. Just you have such a great, lively energy that I really love. And of course, Evan, I love you too, because you've been here from the beginning. So I really look forward to this show and our upcoming shows and all that jazz.
My God.
I know.
It's getting dusty in here.
Yeah, I know. I'm not really generally sentimental, except that I am. So there you go.
I was like, you are majorly sentimental.
Yeah, I really am.
You sap.
I think, I think people like maybe don't know that about you. Like people who don't know you well, maybe, but yeah, no, you totally are.
Yeah.
That's right, listeners outside. That gruff exterior is a gooey center.
Yeah. As my dad calls me, his little M&M. So there you go. You know, hard outside, soft inside. For those of you who don't know the old M&M taglines. Also, thanks, Mom and Dad, for everything.
Oh, that's so nice. I thought you were going to say Rolo because, you know, the gooey.
Oh, Rolos are good. Rolos are good, too. But
yeah, but I like M&M. That's super cute because it's a much harder shell, too.
Yeah.
Well, I also have a few things to say. And, you know, you listening to you guys, I mean, this is such a huge accomplishment. And I feel kind of like I'm riding on the coattails because I've only been here for about like 2.5, 2.25 years. So what you guys have created and with Chris is amazing. I mean, when I came on and even before then, when I was a guest on the show, you guys already had this incredible, well-oiled machine where you had a, you know, fantastic film insights. You had this great fun banter and rapport and superior audio quality. I have to say that cannot stress that enough, that the audio quality is chef's kiss. And, you know, I was very lucky to be able to guest on the show occasionally, and it was always so fun when I did. And then when you guys asked me to join as a co-host, I don't know if I've ever actually expressed this to you guys, but that was an incredibly dark and low point in my life. And
the when we asked you or just
no,
the time?
Before. Yeah. No, before.
Come on.
It's like you asked me and everything became horrible. I know.
But you wanted to clarify like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was a really dark, dark time for me professionally, personally, kind of on all the levels. And when you guys asked, it was such a light, it very much needed. And it really, working on this show with you both has been such a privilege and an honor. And it provided very much needed structure and continuity in my life. Uh-huh. And I was having a blast, enjoying working with you guys, which doesn't ever feel like work. It just feels like fun. Like I get to hang out with my two good friends. And then the world fell apart, or rather fell apart further.
Yeah.
And with COVID, and, you know, now there's war, or another war, because there's always been wars. But the world continues to fall apart. And especially during COVID, with, you know, having to distance and not being able to see people and all of that. And I still don't see very many people very often because COVID's still here, sadly. Mm-hmm. You know, you two in this show have really and truly been an incredible lifeline. Like, I cannot stress how much you guys and Evan, your attention to detail, and Dave, your exuberant outbursts. I love them both. And Evan, your dad puns.
Oh, shucks.
They make me smile. You guys make me think. You challenge me. You make me a better person. You make me a better film critic. You make me a better podcaster. And you truly have been a lifeline through this pandemic. And I say this, and I know it's going to come off trite and flippant, and I don't mean it that way. I don't know what I would have done without you guys in the show. And I am just so incredibly grateful. And I'm really grateful to both of you. I'm grateful to my friends and family who also listen. And Shauna is our number one fan, and that's amazing. And yeah, we love Shauna. And I'm also very grateful for Otto, who is our most amazing editor. And yeah, and listeners, I'm thankful for all of you as well. So thank you.
Wow. I'm glad I got a box of Kleenex ready.
I know. I'm getting all misty.
Like, seriously, that was, you got to warn me before you do that. I mean, you got.
Sorry. Yeah. I told you I got myself misty when I was writing up some notes.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That you're, what you said means a lot. It's been a difficult couple of years for me for many reasons. And this show and you and Evan have been something nice and steady and fun. So that's been, it's been a big relief. And I always look forward to it too.
Yeah, same.
No, I'm going to cry.
Sorry.
No, but I feel the same. It's so lovely. Oh, it's just a big love fest here, and I love that.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah, I want to also just reiterate what you said. Thank you to Otto, since you've come aboard, for all of your hard work.
Yes, thank you, Otto.
And thank you to Chris, who we'll get to talk to in a minute. So I will get to express my appreciation then. But, you know, he was with us for a while, too. And it's been a fun ride.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, thank you guys for letting me be a part of this amazing ride.
Thanks for joining us. Really. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for joining us.
I'm going to cry more. Oh,
it's okay. We'll get it out of the way early, and then it'll just be dad jokes the rest of the show.
Woohoo! Okay, so we are extremely excited. I think that is a huge, huge understatement. That original Spoiler Piece Theater co-founder and co-host Chris Jensen is joining us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, Chris.
I like what you've done with the place.
Thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me, and congratulations on 400.
Thank you. We literally couldn't have done it without you. So, you know.
It would be like, you'd be under, where were we? I don't know. Was that like just shy of 300, I think. So you'd still have a ways to go.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
You did a lot of episodes.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't miss it. And this, it's exciting that you're doing a special episode for it. And it's nice to be back. This is, it's the Zoom thing. It's not technically Zoom, but like, it's good for podcasts. It keeps things kind of fresh, you know, like comfy. You can get in your own zone without feeling like you're imposing on someone else by how you're sitting, or that you're creaking, or that you're rustling your papers, or you know. And if we all live at different temperatures, you know, I remember temperature change was one of the hardest things about being in the same room with everybody.
Yeah,
for a long
time. Yeah, it got real hot.
Yeah,
yeah. Turn off that air conditioner. Because of the air. Yikes.
Right, yeah.
As I shared earlier, we wanted to do something a bit different. And Chris, you so wonderfully chose one of the films from the AFI Top 100 list. You chose High Noon, which is an incredible Western, 1952, starring Gary Cooper, directed by Fred Zinnemann, written by Carl Foreman. Chris, why don't you tell us why you chose this film and what the AFI list means to you? And then after that, we'll dive in to discussing the film.
Yeah. So to start at the very beginning, the AFI is very beginning is that when I was procrastinating on writing my thesis in grad school, I started, this is when Netflix was still a disc delivery service. I put all of the AFI movies on my Netflix queue, and whatever I got, I would watch. And, you know, I would sort of trade blog posts with my friend Adam, who's a TV editor in LA. And then I was like, maybe I want to like really try this. I knew a guy who wrote, excuse me. I knew a guy who wrote music reviews for a local paper called Dig Boston, at the time Weekly Dig, now Dig Boston. And he sent me up. I emailed the editor, said, "Hey, what if I do this weekly?" And then so every week I was watching the AFI 100 and reviewing it. And then one thing led to another, and that's how I got into this whole thing. And so that's what the AFI is to me. And unless you use the Wayback Machine, you're not going to find them. That's just the thing with the Dig archives. Plus, like a lot of those, I wouldn't really stand by. There's a lot of like, whoa, I can say whatever I want. And without thinking about I'm the larger place that these things are having, which is freeing. And then you say things that you don't really, I don't really think that anymore. Or I didn't think that through. Not that I'm embarrassed by anything, but like anybody who reads their own work, this is 10 years ago now. I was the like energetic, I'm going to revolutionize this thing kind of attitude. And, I mean, nobody does.
The hazards of being a critic, right?
Right. And plus like tackling all these movies, it was really my own way of, you know, I hadn't seen so many of the movies on the list, and it was my own way of watching them. And then by way of me learning, I was learning in real time as I was writing about them. So they weren't exactly scholarly. It was a great way to get into it. And High Noon in particular, is of the movies on the AFI 100, I feel like this is not, when I see people revisit classic movies for one reason or another, something's an anniversary, something is like, someone, it's somebody's birthday, somebody died, or this thing is relevant or something like that. I feel like High Noon doesn't get that a lot, even though a lot of people know it. A lot of people watch it, has a great reputation. It's famous for its allegory and then the response allegory of Rio Bravo. Like, it's famous for its place with a lot of film history, but I felt like I didn't get the sense that it got the revisiting treatment very much. So of all the AFI movies, that was the one that I think I was more energized to talk about in a spoiler piece context.
Yeah. Spoiler, three guys wait for a train for a long time.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, in real time.
Yeah.
It is in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, do you want to give a little summary, Chris, of the plot as it is?
I think you just did.
Oh.
And then add to that, that Gary Cooper plays Marshall, who put a guy away for murder a long time ago, who was supposed to hang. Word's gotten out that he's been released. At the same time, people see his old posse riding to the train station where there's a noon train coming, and they figure out he's on that train. They don't have confirmation, but they know, like the way you just know these things. Mm. And so then, as it also happens, this is, I'm not going to say character names. I think that's spoiler piece tradition for me, at least, you know. So Gary Cooper is getting married to Grace Kelly, who is a Quaker. And so at the same time that he's married, which is strictly pacifist, which doesn't work for a Marshall's line of work. So at the same day that he's getting married, he's also hanging up his gun and his badge, and he's going to go, open a shop, I think it was. And however, his replacement's not coming until the next day, but this is happening in an hour that this train is arriving, and all hell's going to break loose. They're specifically targeting the marshal, but this is not going to go well. So Marshall's ready to go gather up a deputize the town, or, you know, sort of the usual suspects of people he can count on to get a badge and a gun for the day to do what needs to be done to, you can tell he's done this before. He's, you know, where he's rallied the troops before. This time's different though. This time people are scared. People have a reason. Some reasons make sense. Other ones you can tell they're coming up with at the moment. There's people who are self-interested. There's people who are maybe sympathetic to Frank Miller. Is that it? That's his name.
Yeah.
They're either sympathetic or they're indifferent, or they don't want violence, or they don't want chaos, and they think they can just ride it out. Or they think, sheriff, get out of here and there won't be a problem. All these are happening. Meanwhile, Marshall can't get a posse together. So he has to face these guys alone. And it's about like an hour and 20 minutes or so from the time that he gets the news. And so that's it. Mm-hmm. It's him getting just the weight of this. You can see, you know, the texture of his sweat, the face, you know, his face is already great at the beginning. Like, he's got this sunken, like, I can't believe I have to do this, but I'm going to, look on his face. And then over time, it just gets dragged down and down and down until he's like, who knows what's going to happen. And, then he ends up saving the day. However, it's not heroic. It's tough. And it feels more brutal than I think 1952 Westerns, in my opinion, tend to be. Like, the violence feels like way more of a threat. The action is not exciting. It's really tense. And you end up with Grace Kelly shooting a guy because it's either he gets shot or Gary Cooper gets shot. And I think that's the end of the movie. Yeah. Although, no, the very end of the movie is he, you know, the town rallies around, sees that Frank Miller and his gang are dead. Gary Cooper throws his star down in disgust or exhaustion or some combination of that and leaves. And it's beautiful. Yeah. And it's angry and it's suspenseful and it's experimental. And it looks great. It sounds great. You got a lot of young versions of people who in your brain are just permanently old. In particular, I'm talking about Lloyd Bridges. Yeah. Like young Lloyd Bridges is like jumbo shrimp to me. It's like how, like that doesn't, that's an oxymoron, but he has that, like he has that youthful disdain. It's really nice. Every character is well thought out. The dialogue is great. Makes great use of time. And it's wonderful.
Wow. I agree with all that.
I know I was going to say, guys, Evan, Dave, what do you guys think too?
So this was my first time seeing the movie. I watched it on AMC Plus and actually it looked really good. So that was definitely something I noticed, the very sharp looking movie, like really good cinematography. Lots of great close-ups on people's faces. A lot of great facial, specifically like from the nose up acting from Gary Cooper. Like you can read so much into his eyes as a character in any given moment, and his eyes communicate so much. And what I feel like at times is an otherwise kind of stiff performance, like in terms of like delivery and cadence of his voice. But I've seen some Westerns here and there. It's not my favorite genre, but this one is really tense and tight. It's just under an hour and a half. As Chris mentioned, it takes place in real time. I love the emphasis on the ticking clock that keeps coming up. You know, as it inches closer and closer to noon, the tension just keeps ratcheting up. And I love that the violence is in the action is really just saved primarily for, I would say, the last like 10, 15 minutes. Like they like really keep you waiting for this conflict to happen. And, you know, I agree with Chris. It is definitely, you know, it's tough violence. It doesn't feel heroic, but you know, that's something to appreciate about it. And I like all the debates that you see in the film, like the scenes where he goes to the church and, you know, he goes to the bar and he's laughed out of the bar, and in the church they have like a almost like a town hall style meeting where people get to raise their hands and kind of say their piece. And I think both sides make really compelling points about whether they should or should not help the sheriff, and I think that's definitely interesting. I really dug this movie. I liked that, you know, the debate that Grace Kelly has this character, you know, as a Quaker, she's either choose violence and have her husband live or choose pacifism and he dies. I think that's compelling. And, I like the scenes with her and the character, Helen, and seeing them interact with
each
other.
Oh, Katie Hirado.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I like seeing them talk. This does not pass the Bechdel test, right? Like there's not any scene where they're not talking about men, right?
It does not. And that's funny you say that, because that's in my notes, that it comes so close to passing the Bechdel test, but not quite.
Yeah. It does. It edges around it, which I think is kind of impressive for a 1952 movie.
Especially a 1952 Western, you know, because they were... That was in the 1950s, that was the time period of the woman's film where women were in many Hollywood, classic Hollywood films. So there were lots of films that passed the Bechdel test at that time, but not Westerns. Mm. So that's impressive.
Yeah.
But Dave, I want to talk more about that later. But Dave, I want to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, High Noon is always an interesting choice for me because it's such a great idea. And I agree with both Evan and Chris about you know, the arguments pro and anti teaming up with Gary Cooper to form a posse and go shoot the hell out of Frank Miller. I also agree with Evan. I have never found Gary Cooper as compelling as most people do. I mean, you want to talk about stiff. I mean, this guy makes Kevin Costner look like he's emoting all the time. So
But it fits this character.
It does fit. The stoicism does fit this character, though. That's true. And I agree with like the eye acting. I actually was thinking about Tom Hardy's performance in Dunkirk a couple of times.
Yes.
When I was watching Gary Cooper. And as far as like the psychological, I always just think of this as more of like a just, you know, we were talking about ratcheting up the tension. And this is just, you know, an exercise in like psyching yourself out and and what's going to happen. And I had forgotten, I hadn't seen this in probably, I don't know, 15 years or something. And I had forgotten, even though it's sanitized violence, it's still pretty brutal for its time. And the psychological aspect remind me a lot of a movie that came out the following year with Jimmy Stewart, Bend of the River by Anthony Mann, just sort of getting in the way Fred Zinnemann and High Noon sort of gets into the characters' heads and shows you, they tell you what they're thinking, but they also sort of physically manifest what they're thinking. You were talking about Gary Cooper's like flop sweat, basically, Evan. And, you know, like I feel like with every close up, you know, if there's one bead of sweat in his first close up, by the 14th close up, there's 14 beads of sweat. You know,
the sweat really intensifies.
Yeah, it really does. And, for sure. And you can also just see Grace Kelly getting more and more like standing upright when she walks. Yes. Just so stiff. Mm-hmm. And Katie Hirado just looking like she's like, oh, fuck this shit, man. You know?
She's so great.
And a very young Lee Van Cleef, who I don't think has any lines. Yes. But
he doesn't, because he wouldn't get his nose fixed.
Ah, well, there you go.
To make him less menacing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was going to be the Lloyd Bridges role.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that all of you love this movie. That's always so exciting. I like it when we all agree. Although it's fun, too, when we disagree.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with everything you guys are saying. What I love especially about the cinematography, which I think is incredibly great here, I really love the scene towards the end. Well, actually, throughout the whole film, the cinematography really excellently highlights Kane's isolation and his growing desperation. And I especially love the scene near the end where the camera zooms out and up and goes into a wide shot of the town, and you really see that it's just him on the street. Yeah. And it just really visually reifies that he is completely on his own. He has no one to rely on except himself and his own integrity and his own sense of moral duty. And I love, Evan, I'm so glad you brought up Amy, Grace Kelly, and Helen Ramirez, played by Katie Hirado. And I really love Katie Hirado's performance, especially because it was great to see a Mexican woman character played by a Mexican actress who is not a trope, not a stereotype. And she is an assertive business owning woman. And it's just really great. And both her and Amy, seeing their perspectives, they're both right. Amy has every right to be a pacifist. She has every right to not condone violence. But Helen is also right to be like, no, I would take up a gun and defend my man, you know, if he was my man. And I also really, really adore the scene between Helen and Kane when they speak in Spanish, and it's not translated via subtitles, but I love it because she says to him, it's been a year since I've seen you, or since we've seen each other. And he says, yes, I know. And that one moment is so simple, but yet it conveys volumes about the depth of their relationship and feelings, even though they're no longer together. And I just really love that. And I love that this film is it's a very simple concept, but it really is digging deep into these moral quandaries and these deep emotions. And I love that. And like you said, Chris, I love the scene where Gary Cooper chucks his star. So great. Such a bitter ending. And I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well earned, I would say, in that moment, that frustration.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, just also think about, you know, he's killed three men, and then his wife, the Quaker, has killed a fourth man, you know?
Yes.
Which is just, you want to talk about like tearing someone's soul in half. Jesus. So.
Absolutely. And Chris, you also said before that you saw Rio Bravo because Rio Bravo was the reaction to this film. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So this, I think this is kind of the footnote that makes High Noon as famous as it is, although I think it stands up on its own, even if this episode were never part of its story. So, you know, John Wayne was offered the role and he turned it down because he thought it was a very obvious commentary on McCarthyism, which he supported. What's funny is that Gary Cooper was also conservative, but he was anti-McCarthyism. And, you know, it's this somebody who is the target of an incoming unstoppable force who everybody has their reason for either putting him in more danger or not involving themselves in his struggle. And that was sort of what was happening to people who were being named. You know, it's will you help me or will you at least help it so that I don't get as hurt as I do? And so that's, I mean, Carl Foreman was the one who was chased out of the U.S. practically. You know, he went to England for work. But, you know, there's a lot of people who were either I think he was the only one who was out and out blacklisted. I might be wrong about that. But plenty of people were known activists or lefties or sympathizers who were involved in this movie. And John Wayne turned it down. He and Howard Hawks they based Rio Bravo on a novel, but their intention was to make what they considered to be a pro-American version of the Rio Bravo concept. And that concept is that, you know, they've arrested this guy for murder and this guy's brother is a very powerful, very wealthy rancher who has so many killers in his pocket that he's going to overpower him, but he's not going to out and out like invade the town until he has to. He's trying to like maneuver it so that he can claim it was kind of a clean situation, that he was in the right. And in that version, the town all rallies behind John Wayne. And what's funny about that is that the first time I saw High Noon was like Iraq was still fresh in my memory. And so I thought this feels like their justification for not going to the UN or, you know, letting weapons inspections keep going. This feels like their explanation for going in alone. So it felt conservative. It's just the context, but it was like, this feels conservative to me. And then you watch Rio Bravo and it's about, you know, wealth overpowering honest people. And so that's funny to me also that this is the conservative response. It tells you something about context, you know, also tells you like micro versus macro perspectives, like, you know, geopolitics versus the day-to-day politics of, you know, townsfolk versus wealthy, regular working people versus money. All that stuff. And I mean, Rio Bravo, it's a really great movie. I think also when I started the AFI project, okay, before I get to that, one thing just on the subject still is that I think the affinity I have for Westerns, I'm not an authority and I haven't watched as many of them as I have other kinds of things that are more interesting to me. But what I always look for in Westerns is each genre, I think, has a strength. Each kind of genre film has its strength. And I think the strength of Westerns is, what are you saying about the foundational mythology of the U.S.? And so in High Noon, it's not the police. It's you know, who do people of different... What moral strains are the ones that are getting embedded in what will eventually become the political fiber of the country we live in now? And that's where, like, lawmen are not the same thing as police. They're people who are, they can either be like somebody like John Wayne, who's the guy who's like the one who's trying to hold everything together, or it's Gary Cooper who's trying to stand for something. So and that's another thing of difference of context. And that's what's always fun for me with Westerns, is like you're turning back the clock, but you're not changing people's nature. Those are the ones that are better to me. It's modern times, just minus 150 years. And
And I think there's no better indicator of that than the church scene, where they're debating about whether they're talking economics. Yeah. Like, oh, well, we can't afford to have people come through and shoot this place up, because then who's going to want to invest money down here?
And it's an honest debate.
Certainly aren't going to want to come down here.
And some people are saying things and it's like, you know, you're like, I disagree with you, but you're internally consistent. Like, I disagree, but you're not a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting because it feels like anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes it feel more realistic too, which is always nice.
What's funny about the High Noon Rio Bravo connection is that they both have Dmitry Tiomkin scores and songs. And like they're not really comparable. I think Rio Bravo kind of took on a life of its own. Like once they decided they wanted to do this kind of story, they really told their own story. They weren't comparing it beat by beat to High Noon. So if you do watch Rio Bravo, just know that it is its own film. The thing that I think they tried to one up is that they had two or three songs instead of the one. You know, High Noon has they have Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson each sing their own song in the same scene. It's Dean Martin and then Ricky Nelson. Did I say Ricky Martin? I didn't mean
no.
I'm I think Dean Martin.
I don't know, but no. I was thinking Ricky Nelson, and I'm here for a Ricky Nelson song.
Somehow they fit a Ricky Martin song in there. It's amazing.
so ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Very prescient.
And like Dean Martin, like sometimes you think, no, he's great. He's really good. He's awesome. Like,
yeah.
I don't think of him outside of the context of Rat Pack. And you know, he has his appeal, or not his appeal. He has his shtick, and you think he's excellent as a shtick. And then you watch him as a recovering alcoholic, and he's going through actual withdrawal symptoms. And it's like, you're selling this, man. It's awesome.
Well, it's probably a really solid movie. A few times on his own.
And John Wayne, right. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, this is something that I'm sure he could draw on for himself. And then also, every time I watch John Wayne, this is another thing that I'm sort of, I think for me, I know who he was politically. And then every time I watch, so I think I've steered away, and I think that's a mistake on my part, at least if I want to understand his place in cinema, because every time I watch him, it's like, you're actually not afraid to be vulnerable. And in Rio Bravo, he's excellent. And every time I watch a John Wayne movie, I think the impression that I know, and then I watch him and it's like, Jesus, man, you're really good. Like,
yeah.
You're not just a character. Like, you're actually, you know, his scenes with Angie Dickinson. He's just, he's great in movies. I should have that caveat.
Yeah, not as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yes, he was a great actor.
So I think one of my next great journeys will be Westerns. And I don't think I'm not going to super commit to it, because I mean, like any genre, there were pylons when there was a success. And so I don't. Like, it's not amazing that Dmitry Tiomkin did both of those movies, because he's one of those guys. He did so many Westerns because there were so many Westerns. And I'm not going to fully commit, but I'm going to, I think, open up my doors to more of the kinds of movies that I think I avoided because I didn't think I was into what they were going for.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that you're opening up to a whole new genre. Mm-hmm. And Westerns are amazing. I might be biased, but they are great.
Yep. I love me a Western.
Oh, I know. They're so good. So, Chris, can you tell us where can people find you? If they want to follow more of your AFI thoughts, if they want to follow what you're doing.
Well, AFI thoughts, like I said, the Dig Boston archives are gone. I had been doing the Russian Guild of Film Critics 100, and you know, in the intros, I was making political commentary on the time period that the movies were made, so that I could fill people in on like what was on audiences' minds, what was on filmmakers' minds, what were the contexts, what were people able to do either politically or in terms of resources, and everything that I would have said for the 1960s is now relevant again. So the project is on hold. But if you want to see what I've done so far, you can go to burritoinamovie.com.
Where we talk about Russian films.
URL. Best URL.
That is good.
But I'm currently on hiatus from reviewing new movies. So if you want something that, if you want an opinion on a movie that was made this century or in a country that still exists, I'm not your guy.
Fair enough.
But Chris is an excellent writer and a great thinker, so you would be well served to search for those no matter what time period he's writing about.
Well, thank you.
Agree. Or listen to old Spoiler Bees episodes.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, we have Chris on.
I'm all over that.
When Megan was on vacation.
But I've been using my hiatus. Like I watched High Noon just a little bit after I finished The Sopranos for the first time. So, and that's a recurring theme for Tony Soprano, is whatever happened to Gary Cooper, the strong silent type.
Yes.
And that was just funny.
Because he's the quintessential man.
And then in this movie, he is desperate and scared. And, you know, so much of The Sopranos is about like masculine denial. And so seeing Gary Cooper as the archetype for Tony Soprano was like, yeah, I mean, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Great connection.
I've been catching up on a lot of TV in my hiatus. Nice. Nobody ever paid me to watch TV before.
A lot of great TV out there. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. We can't thank you enough. I know I speak for both the guys in thanking you, but I want them to thank you because, you know, the three of you worked together for so long. So
yeah, we did.
We were three and now we're four in this special episode. And this has been fun too, getting all of us together and having a conversation. But thank you, Chris, for helping us get the show off the ground. Thank you for coming back recently a couple of times when we called upon you. I know so you're technically on hiatus, but I'm glad we've been able to bring you out of hiatus for at least an episode or two here or there.
Yeah, these have been the breaks in my hiatus, is coming back for guest spots.
Yeah, and I wanted to say thank you for agreeing to do a podcast with someone you didn't know very well, me, and and for putting up with me as long as you did. And also just bringing, in addition to your humor, just some insights that I don't think as deeply or our brains are just wired differently, but you're always in there with something that makes you go, oh yeah, I totally didn't think of that at all. So thank you for helping me broaden my mind and look at movies with, you know, different eyes.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. I remember those meetings in the, was it Watertown? What was the diner in Watertown? I don't remember the name.
Oh, I don't. Yeah.
That famous boxcar diner.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Good times. And you know, I mean, it was a great idea. And it, clearly, because it's 400 episodes. Jesus, congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
Congratulations
thanks for coming back.
Figuring out how to do this. Like, I left before lockdown. And it takes a lot of will, a lot of resourcefulness. You know, the technology has caught up, I think, with this sort of structure. But I can't even imagine the reshuffling you must have done at the time.
Yeah. There was some shuffling, but we shuffled it together, I guess.
Boy, did we.
Well, thanks for having me back. Congratulations again.
Thank you for joining us again, Chris. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers. Congratulations.
So as I teased at the beginning of the episode, we're going to have some of our previous guests and friends of the show join us, and we're super excited for that. And we asked them to talk about spoilers in film, and more specifically, we asked them to either answer this question: what's one movie where you think knowing what happens in advance actually makes it more enjoyable? Or number two, what's a movie that shocked you with its twists? Or a movie that shocked everyone else that you were totally able to predict. And I'm super excited to hear their answers and hear them talk about the movies.
Me too. Should be fun.
So we are super excited to have Max Coville, former guest and friend of the show. Hi, Max.
Hi, everyone. It's been a while.
Hello.
Hey, Max.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
So we sent you two questions about spoilers in film, and we want to hear which one you wanted to answer and which films you wanted to talk about.
So yeah, I had to do some homework, right? I was like, it wasn't just coming on to congratulate the three of you, and your former co-host, a happy 400 episodes, as much as I'm happy to be here to do that.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. But it was also to think about what I might want to talk about. And I thought about a lot of films and stuff that had spoilers in it that could kind of influence how you watch the movie. And for me, one movie that instantly came to my mind, and almost a pair because they kind of work together, was Blade Runner and its sequel, Blade Runner 2049.
Ooh.
Ah. Ooh.
Interesting choice. So,
yes. The way that you watch these films changes once you have watched it the first time, and you can actually look for different things. So I feel like it's a really good opportunity to actually like learn a movie and then rewatch it and find secrets about it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that before because, yeah, you watch the first Blade Runner and you're like, I don't know, is he or isn't he? And then 2049, it's explicit, you know, what it is. But if you've already made up your mind having watched the first one and then you watch it again for clues, yeah, I need to watch it again now. Damn it! Add another movie to my list.
Right, Dave. Like these are both the movies. I mean, we're here on Spoiler Piece. They reckon on whether or not the lead heroes are replicants or not, and replicants in the Blade Runner world are sort of like android robots, but they have very complex feelings and emotions, right? That was the big selling point of the first movie, at least in the love relationship with Harrison Ford and his co-star Sean Young. This robot was supposed to have more emotions than ever before, and just how far they get. And then you find out in Blade Runner from 2049 that they might have made an offspring together, which is another ball of worms altogether.
Yeah.
Max, do you have a preferred cut that you that you like to watch of Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner? Because since there are so many.
Yeah, there are five different cuts. Ridley Scott is prolific with re-editing his movies, and it wouldn't surprise me if his two new movies that came out in 21, House of Gucci and The Last Duel, have some kind of like extended editions come out eventually. But yeah, Blade Runner, I like his final cut, the one that he most recently released. I think the added scenes that he's cobbled together. I think there's a scene with Harrison Ford dreaming about like a unicorn or something, and that leads more credence to the fact that he might be a replicant, because the detective at the end of the movie places a like origami unicorn on a desk, and maybe signaling that he's aware that Harrison Ford is having these dreams.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That's Edward James Olmos, right?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the final cut, it does away with like the narration, because I guess like the original theatrical cut had this like weird narration to like to explain everything that was going on. And
oh, have you never seen
the worst?
Yeah. The narration cut? It's unreal how
it is brutal.
It's really awkward.
And the ending is different. It's awful.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah, it makes you think that he's not a replicant at the end of the voiceover version.
So for everybody listening, I want you to know that Evan, Dave, and Megan didn't know what films I'd be talking about here today, but they're able to roll with it. So I'm excited to see what their other guests might bring, and whether or not they'll be able to roll those films as well.
I actually made it a point to see every movie before this show. So.
Dave has not eaten, slept, done anything except watch movies in preparation. Yeah, I'm actually really excited too, because yeah, we have no idea what movies people are going to choose, and I cannot wait. And Max, you came right out of the gate with a really unusual choice, and I love it.
Yeah, and I was looking at I was looking at the second prompt, and I was like, movies that like really shocked you recently, and like I thought it's easy to pick like a horror movie, right? Like I was thinking, like most recently, I had watched movies like *Malignant* and *Titane*, and both those movies are have instant shock factors and can surprise yes, you right away. So, I figured the first prompt was a little bit easier, but before I get off of talking topic, I've explained why I think the original Blade Runner is that way. I was also thinking about 2049, and I was like, I don't think it's really reached like a classic film part yet, and there's still some people who don't really think it's cracked up to be quite the sequel to the original. But I'm a big fan of it. I think Ryan Gosling is really good in it, and I like that the big twist at the end is that he's been living this, at least the time of this whole movie, believing that he could have possibly been this offspring, and he comes to find out he was just one important cog on this mission.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Max. Max, where can people find you?
Yeah, people can find me on my podcast. It's the Pitchers Podcast. It's also a newsletter these days on Substack. I've had some recent pieces posted at Paste Magazine, the website. I'm going to have some more reviews going up soon there. Pretty excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love your Substack, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And your podcast. All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Max.
Yes. Congratulations to you guys.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Thank you.
He's coming in.
Coming in hot.
Andy Crump Womp.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. How are you all doing?
We're okay.
Hello. We're doing good. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
We can.
And we're already recording, so keep it clean, Crump.
Well, I'm just going to have to leave then.
So because we're under time constraints, we're just going to jump right in. We've already done an intro. So Andy, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited you're here.
Me too.
Woohoo. Woo. So we gave you a couple of prompts to talk about spoilers in film. So why don't you tell us what you thought about?
I thought about the second time I watched Jordan Peele's sophomore movie, Us, and how Us improves rather than degrades with a second viewing, despite the fact that the whole film builds up to a pretty big twist that upends the entire movie that we've been watching up to that point. For people who have not seen Us, this is, again, Jordan Peele's second movie. A family goes on a beachside vacation. As their vacation progresses, they fall under attack by their doppelgangers, and slowly but surely, the doppelgangers of other people we have seen in the film start to pop out of the woodwork and also attack them, and it becomes clear pretty quick that this is a mass scale doppelganger attack event apocalypse thing. It's not really an apocalypse. It seems to just be happening in America. And then once you get to the end, you realize, well, you don't realize, you are shown that everything we thought we knew is a lie. Lupita Nyong'o's character, she obviously is playing two versions of herself. She's playing the real world version of herself, and then she's playing this doppelganger version of herself, except the doppelganger is the real her, and the real her is the doppelganger, because they they were switched and in childhood. It's like the ultimate switched at birth horror story, except it wasn't at birth. Anyways, it's funny to go back. Not funny. It's like, I mean, it is funny. Ha ha ha. We're all laughing. It's interesting to go back and watch the movie again when you know that Adelaide, Lupita's character, is not who she performs herself as from the very beginning. It makes every gesture that her character makes, every neuroses she has, every expression she puts on, it makes those things way more. We know that the reasons that she kind of wants to leave before this happens, before the doppelgangers mm-hmm. show up, before, you know, people start getting, you know, stabbed to death by their clones using scissors. Because she knows. It's not just that she has an instinctual feeling in her gut, because she's a mother, and she just knows that something bad is... It's because she's the doppelganger. It's because she knows this is the place. And she realizes just that... She realizes that this is not going to end well for her or for her real family, who get attacked by their doppelganger. There's so much that you get. There's so much richness that you get from reexamining the family dynamic when you know that she is an imposter. And there's so much richness you get from thinking about the doppelgangers when you know that the doppelganger, Lupita, is the actual the real person. And it gives you new ways to appreciate the movie, and it adds layers to the movie. That they're present the first time that you see it, but you don't know that they're there because you don't know, you don't understand the thing. You don't know what the thing is yet. I mentioned this on Twitter fairly recently. I do think that eventually Get Out will be usurped by Us as Jordan Peele's truest masterpiece. I just think it's going to take a lot of time because Us is such a slippery, tricky, naughty, with a K, not an N-A-U-H. No, yeah. Not that. No, No, no.
You mean Kanati.
Yeah, it's a Kanati movie. not a naughty movie, but a Kanati movie. Mm-hmm. That it's just, everything that it's about is not obvious right away. So I advocate two things. One, watch it twice. Two, read the thing I wrote about doppelganger movies. It published in 2020, and it was about all the doppelganger movies from 2019. And then three, you should watch the Duality of Us Privilege. It's a bonus feature on the Blu-ray release for Us, and in it, Jordan Peele makes the observation that, and here I'm quoting him, "For us to have our privilege, somebody suffers, and those who suffer and those who prosper are two sides of the same coin." That, I think, is a good starting place for watching the movie blind. Although if you're listening to this, you have seen, because I have told you. So now you see with your ears.
I put this question to you.
Yes, sir.
If Adelaide had switched with her doppelganger, or the doppelganger had switched with her, however you want to put it, when she was a child, and then 25 years later, couldn't you make the argument that the doppelganger is not the doppelganger, but the actual Adelaide now?
You could make that argument.
But that
goes back to why the movie works so well, because there is so much ambiguity. Because I think there are no clear cut out answers to any of the questions that you could raise about it. I mean, strictly speaking, no. Red is the real Adelaide. She's just been hijacked into this identity. You know, it's like that. That is not. That is like that's her. It's the real her. It's just not the her that would have been, had she not been hijacked. Had she not been, forcibly switched by her doppelganger at birth. Like, they became the people that they became because of an act of violence that was committed by the doppelganger in childhood. So, that doesn't mean that what you're saying doesn't have validity, because it does. It's very complex, and I that's one of the reasons I love the movie so much. And it's one of the reasons why I would advocate and strongly encourage, which are the same thing, advocate strong. Anyways, that's why I would really recommend going back to watch, Us again, and then think about movies that have a twist, and then think about going and revisiting those and seeing if the twist, knowing the twist in advance, kills the pleasure of the experience or not. For me, I would go again, Old Boy, my number one favorite movie of all time, is like the ending is hinges on a very big twist. I've seen that movie. I have all my fingers and toes, so more times than I have fingers and toes. So more than 20 times. And it's never lost anything for me. So think about it. Think about that.
I will.
Thank you, Andy. And that is why we're here, to talk about spoilers. And we agree. Spoilers, knowing them, you can dig in deeper. Andy, thank you so much. Where can people find you on social media? Find your writing? Tell us all the goods.
Well, right now you can find me on my couch in my basement, and it's very cold because the heater's dead. But oh, no. Online, you can find me. Yeah, our gas fireplace decided after 20 years of operation that it just didn't want to be on this planet anymore. So, but you can find me online, Twitter at AGRACRU, AgriCrew, and you can find all my writing posted on my blog at agcrump.wordpress.com.
Andy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I hope you guys have a good rest of your night.
Thank you.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
So I was like, I always call you Deirdre because you're Deirdre, right? To me. Yeah.
You can call me Deirdre.
I know you as Deirdre. Yes. Okay. Then I will. So Deirdre Crimmins, you're Dee Dee to so many people, but you're Deirdre to me because I know and love you. Thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to have you. I'm always happy to see your lovely, delighted face. Let's talk about movies. Let's talk about spoilers. We gave you two prompts. The floor is yours.
Oh, God. I'm like, I could take you on the emotional journey that I went through trying to figure out what to talk about. Or
That'll probably be just as good because you tell a good story.
So, like, there was the first question. It was just like... which films are better if you know the ending or you know, there are no spoilers or everything is spoiled. Don't quote me on that. I might be totally doing like an interpretive dance about your questions. But for that, I started thinking about films that like are better the second time around because you're not paying attention to the plot and you're just getting a look, an idea of the look and feel. And then I started thinking like French New Wave, like Breathless, like the plot doesn't really matter. You're just kind of paying attention to the editing and stuff like that. And then I also thought about like, I don't know, like Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, which is like all style, no substance. I love that weird shit. So I was like, maybe we can talk about those. But then I'm also thinking like,
yeah, that's way too smart for me though. So.
No, I assure you it's not.
Okay.
But then I was like, but that's not necessarily, that's better in second viewing where you don't have to pay attention to the plot or even try and wrap your head around a plot. That's not like if someone told you like, hey, here's what happens in this movie, then it's better. So then I looked at the second question and I thought about, there was the second part of the second question, I think, which sounds like I'm like breaking down a legal brief, but it was like, what films did I like that other people were surprised by? And I was like, you goddamn idiots. Why aren't you just paying attention? Mm-hmm. They told you everything. Maybe that's not how you worded the question, but when
but
I was,
that's what we meant.
That's like what that. You meant. Exactly. So then I was just like, wording. Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, that's Midsommar. Like, hello. They literally tell you every single thing that's going to happen in that film. And that's why I love it. Like horror films usually you're in the dark and in the shadows, and especially Hereditary was, but then Midsommar, like literally they tell you everything that's going to happen. They're like, hey, guess what? People die when they turn a certain age. And then you see someone die and there's people in the theater gasping. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, maybe it's a little judgy, but I'm like, they literally just told us everything isn't bright, bright sun. We're looking at like woven tapestries about how the next person's going to get killed. And everyone's like, who saw this coming? I'm like, everyone. Literally, they took time to weave a blanket. They painted all these walls. I love that film, though. I don't like again. Like if so, they are telling you, it's so good. Yeah, they are telling you exactly what's going to happen. But it's just like, if anything, it's just like you wake up one morning and someone's like, "Hey, you're going to be hit by a car," and you're like, "Well, this is great." Like it's just like that. You spend the rest of the time like bracing yourself for it.
Yes.
Yes, that was
That makes that film even more tense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That was my
choice. On rewatch too. It's just so tense and it's so great knowing exactly what's coming.
Yeah. And then I was thinking about films that like might be utterly ruined by spoilers. And I feel like horror films, like kind of span the whole, like, I don't really care what's happening with the plot, or, oh my God, this entire film is plot. Malignant? Like, I can't, like, I was screaming at my TV when I saw that, and I was so, so happy I didn't have it spoiled for me. But even then, like, I feel if it gets spoiled, I wouldn't have believed anyone if they told me what happens in that film.
Really? You were surprised about the head
bananas.
Baby?
I don't think I was surprised. I think at the way that it was played off, I was like,
oh, well, yeah.
Like,
I mean, that killing machine was something else.
The killing, yeah, I'm like, I saw a lot of good, like, Halloween costumes from it this year. The whole electricity thing is so stupid. That has nothing to do with anything. That kind of made me angry. Right. But whatever. Nobody's perfect. Well, that's not true. There are plenty of perfect films and I love them. But yeah. yeah. So that was just like, I was just, you gave me prompts and I thought about them and I stewed on them possibly for too long because my brain was slightly broken today. And I'm just like, guys, let's talk about all of them. I'm going to cover all the films.
All the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be like a normal visit.
But yeah. Yeah. I don't know. When it comes to spoilers, like, I still listen to your guys' show even when I'm not on it because I love you and it feels like I'm hanging out with you and you have all smart things to say. Of course. I don't care about the spoiler. Like, it's like one of those, like, if I'm listening and it's a film I haven't seen before, I'll still listen to it because I'm still going to watch it later. But then the other side of that coin is that you guys have, I literally run from a theater if they're showing a trailer.
Mm.
Like, I mean, not run. I, you know, hurry out so I don't have to watch it. And I, one time on a date, it was like a second date with this guy, and I forgot about trailers and I leaned over to him because the trailer started and it was for a Star Wars film and I really didn't want to see the trailer. And I was like, I assure you I'm coming back and I'll explain later, but I need to leave immediately. And I just, like, left the theater.
That makes sense though, because trailers and marketing are different than spoilers.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation, but there is a very pertinent pivotal difference.
Yeah.
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 Dee Dee, we could talk to you for like hours about film. You and I have.
We
talked
have,
about
yes.
film for hours. Actually, all four of us have talked about film for hours.
Yeah, we have. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are so happy that you're here. Thank you so much for being a part of this special episode. Where can people find you on social media and your writing?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say the easiest thing is to find me on Twitter. So I'm at Dee Dee Crim. That's DeeDeeCrim. And that profile links to my Rotten Tomatoes. I usually post links to all this stuff that I've written and get posted elsewhere. And yeah, I rant about stuff. That's always fun, right? That's what the internet's for.
Ranting is the best.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it's for.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dee Dee.
Bye.
Bye.
Charlie Nash.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. I love you guys. I've been on this show for
We love you.
Thank you, Charlie. We love you.
I think I've guest starred on this podcast more than any other podcast, and I couldn't be more honored because I love being in your presence, especially your podcast presence at all times. So,
Oh my God.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's so nice to see your face.
It's so nice to see yours, too.
Aw.
Yeah, with Omicron and everything, and I haven't seen much of anybody outside of work, so it's been a wild few. I mean, it's been a wild 2 years, but yeah.
Yes.
Although we did bump into each other outside the Coolidge a couple, 3 months ago.
We did. Yeah. I think Licorice Pizza
that's
was opening.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Charlie, we sent you some questions about spoilers in film, and we want to hear what you have to say about that.
So... I got the prompts and there were, I think the ones that Evan sent me were what film is best, correct me, what film only gets better when you know what's happening or when it's spoiled for you, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've effect. Already shared what those prompts are, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I was asking people and I was like, what should I talk about? And my roommate was like, well, Mulholland Drive's your favorite movie, right? I'm like, oh, yeah. No, that's the best example.
That is the best example.
Yeah. All of you, I know, Megan, you've seen it. Dave, Evan, have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
Ago. Yeah. It is a movie like pretty much everyone's first time. You kind of watch it and you're like, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm entranced, or hopefully you're entranced and not annoyed. Doesn't seem like Evan. Is this an Evan movie for you? It doesn't seem like it's an Evan movie.
Oh, no. Definitely not.
Yeah. I remember watching it in high school. I was 16. My parents, oddly enough, recommended it to me, as did an English teacher I had who just wrote it up on the whiteboard, just wrote Mulholland Drive on a Friday night afternoon. And I was like, why'd you write that? And he was just like, I just want you kids to see it. And it was kind of like, so I was just like, huh. And I remember asking my parents, I'm like, have you seen Mulholland Drive? And my parents were like, oh, we loved that movie. You would really get a kick out of it. So it was like a Friday night. I remember when, like, whatever social gathering that I had ended early, and I was just like, well, I'll pop this in from Netflix. And I remember it was the first David Lynch film I'd ever seen, and I just remember being like, I didn't know film could be like this, that just this like just that it didn't have to obey certain rules and structures and stuff like that. And at the same time, while I was completely perplexed by what was going on structurally, I feel like I felt that movie so deep in my bones, and I eventually ended up writing about it to get into Emerson College. I'm not sure how good that essay is. Probably not very good, but it's...
I'm sure it's great.
It's probably very saccharine, but like, I think that movie is so brilliant in that even the first time around when you're completely perplexed, it takes you on this ride. But then when you know what's going on, are we allowed to get into like depth about what the film is about and like sure. Is it typical spoiler piece stuff?
This is spoiler piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for those who have not seen Mulholland Drive, it starts off with Laura Lena Herring in the back of a limo without any context as to who she is or what she's doing. The car stops, two people pull a gun on her and they say, get out of the car. And then out of nowhere, a drunken car of inebriated teenagers smashes into the car. She gets out with a little scratch on her head, but everyone else is dead. And then she basically makes her way into an apartment that she sneaks into and hides there. And then Naomi Watts, who's this upcoming actress who just moved in from Ontario into Los Angeles, is there. And when Naomi Watts is like, oh, what's your name? I believe she first says Rita Hayworth, which Laura Lena Herring looks like Rita Hayworth because there's a poster for Gilda in the bathroom. But then you find out that Laura Lena Herring's character has amnesia as a result of this accident and doesn't remember who she is. And Naomi Watts decides to help her find out her identity. And that's a pretty basic setup for a movie that consistently shifts perspectives on certain ensemble characters. There's Justin Theroux, who's a struggling director who's losing gigs because he won't hire a certain actress. There's there's someone who had a traumatic who has been having very traumatic dreams about a certain fast food or diner that he wants to that he needs to go to take his therapist to because he can't get over these night terrors. There's the worst hitman in the world, the worst hitman who just constantly botches every job. There's all this stuff going on. And then the film shifts gears right when you start to think it's reaching a conclusion, where every character changes names, personalities, lifestyles, and it becomes this wait what moment where it just completely shifts gears and throws you off balance, and everything you thought you knew is now completely just up in the air. It's basically the first half is a dream that Naomi Watts' character has, and the second half is her harsh reality. And what I love about this film is it is both in love with movies and also very critical of the capitalistic vampiric nature of Hollywood, and is also very queer in terms of just explicitly with its character's sexualities and also just in terms of its aura. And it's one of those things where if you go back and watch it more and more with the knowledge that there's the first half is in a dream, you can pick up on all sorts of things that could symbolize everything that Naomi Watts' character is going through subconsciously. So when you get to the second half of the film, and there's no even like hard, there's no specific answers as to why. It's all through emotion and interpretation, which is why it moves me so much. Sorry, I hope that isn't like too much, too vague, nor too much of a time filler.
No, I think with Mulholland Drive, you could like go through the movie beat by beat and it still wouldn't. That's one of those movies that I think you just have to see it. Somebody could describe it to you and be like, nah. And then you watch it like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to experience it.
Yeah, it's an experience. It's not like something you watch. It's something that you like, you let sink into you.
There's one, the I think the ultimate scene that that just defines why I love this movie is they go to this club at one point and they literally tell you that it's all staged, like it's all recording and that it's all an illusion. And they flat out tell you this is not real. This is an illusion. And then the characters get so sucked into this song that a character sings. Even though they tell you it's a recording, they get so moved by it that they completely forget that it is an illusion, which is what you tell yourself all the time watching movies. And that kind of captures just the power of why we go to the movies to begin with, is it tells the characters and the audience, this is not real. And yet you feel it so deeply as if it is happening right in front of you. So,
yeah.
Beautifully said. Mm-hmm. Great point.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Charlie. I want to hear you talk more about Mulholland Drive, but that will have to be another conversation for another day. Charlie, where can people find you on social media and your all your film thoughts?
You can follow me on Twitter at ctnash91. That's ctnash91. You can also follow me on Letterboxd with that same handle. And I'm currently co-hosting a fairly new podcast with my friends Kevin Tudor and Bryden Doyle called Almost Major, where we talk about films that were released by studios that are no longer that are either no longer big or don't even really exist anymore. So right now we're doing Artisan, when that's been a lot of fun. So thank you so much for having me on, you guys. I hope I didn't ramble for too long.
No, you're great as always, Charlie.
You're great, Charlie. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Love and miss you all.
We love and miss you.
Love you too.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye.
Do you see me? Do you hear me? All that stuff?
Yes. Hello.
Yeah, I thought, well, there's going to be like 10 people before me, and obviously they're already going to have mentioned kind of the ones that are in every listicle article or the ones that are on that famous T-shirt that has every spoiler on it. Do you know what I mean? Like that one, I was like, so people are already going to mention, Fight Club, Saw, Empire Strikes Back, Gone Baby Gone,
no,
Planet of the Apes, all that.
No,
kind of
no one has mentioned any of those.
Usual Suspect. No, nobody's mentioned the. So everybody's been really snobby on this show and come with some, okay. So I thought everybody was going to have done the like classic, spoilery twists, and I was going to have to do something that was, I was going to be like, okay, you've already ran through that. But now I almost feel like I don't want to be in this hoity-toity upper echelon of people. Empire Strikes Back, cool. The most famous one of them all. Have you guys mentioned the first movie that has a twist?
The very first movie that has a twist?
Yeah, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Oh, no, we haven't.
Yeah, it's
we
came
have
out
not.
In
no one
19,
else has mentioned it.
Come out in 1920. It's known as the first film that has a twist. Yeah, so, yeah, that's, I mean, basically that, your show is all these years later, 102 years later, spoiler piece theater could not exist without The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. So, yeah, your first twist that you could not spoil. So what has been said so far? Just give me a quick run on, because I don't want to do repeats.
That's okay. We have people who've done repeats, and we don't mind that. We want to know about what movies move you for spoilers. Like, what do you think is a better experience, knowing the spoiler or not knowing the spoiler? Or what, shocks, what twists have shocked you?
I do want to say this. Good twists are very rare, because that's why you get a million twists that are like, it's really my brother, it's really my dad, it's really my mom. Like, that's it. There's so many of those. And there's a lot of movies that are like that. It's so rare. And that's why all of the good ones fit on one T-shirt. Right. Like it's very rare to have like a really amazing twist where you're like, oh my God, mind blown. I can't leave the cinema. I have to, everybody stay off Twitter, 'cause this movie has an amazing twist in it. But, I really I mean, there's really old twists that I love. Of course, some of them would just be, you know, you got to go back to some of your classics like Psycho. That's one of your really classic surprises, spoilers, right? I feel like the residual effects of that movie led to probably a change in the entire horror genre. I think there's a lot of copycat Psychos out there. The movies are still copying Psycho out there.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to just go super modern into territory that I'm sure nobody touched on, two of the last three Spider-Man movies actually had fantastic twists. The first one, Spider-Man Homecoming, had the outstanding twist that his love interest's father was a Vulture.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the best twists because it happened when they were in the car together. And you remember mm-hmm. how he made him stay in the car? I want to talk to you for a second. It was so menacing and it was so great. And I remember in the theater just being like, oh, this is so, so fantastic. Yeah. I didn't see that coming. And I have something to admit after I tell you about some of these twists. And then, of course, you know, Spider-Man, we just recently wonderfully had Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire show up in our movie. The biggest spoilery, don't tell anybody twist that's happened in quite some time, although I feel like it was hard to avoid. So... yeah, I was going with a few. I looked at some lists and stuff because I have a problem. Every twist in a movie surprised me. I never figure out twists. And I think of myself as a fairly intelligent person. But I don't figure out twists. So I'm always surprised. Every movie, no matter how small the twist, I'm always like, oh, wow. Like I always get very shocked and surprised by every single movie. And I got asked about this actually recently, and I was like, I think it's because like I'm never trying to break it down in my I think in the movie I like to just stay in the moment, and I'm not really trying to, you know, parse together, oh, what's this mystery going to be? Like, I don't try to be smarter than the movie, I guess. I just ride along with it, and it always surprises me, and that's always good. The things that do distract me when I watch a movie is like, I'm always looking at a shot and going, oh, that's such a beautiful shot. Or I go like, oh, this dialogue is really, really tight. But I'm not really trying to parse, you know, the plot together and be like, oh, I'm going to figure this out. So I get surprised all the time. And I think, you know, with a lot of these movies, it's, you know, ignorance is bliss. And I'm ignorant as all hell. So... in a lot of lists were the movie Old Boy,
oh,
which of course has the classic.
Old Boy did come
which
up.
Which of course has, well, I'm going to say that Old Boy is not my favorite Chan Wook Park twist. So my favorite twist in a Chan Wook Park movie is, or Park Chan Wook, if you want to say it correctly, is in the movie Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And in Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, everything plays out the way that you think it would. The father of the kidnapped girl exacts his revenge on the former employee that kidnapped her, not intending to kill her. So it's already this holy, like, you know, conflicting ending. You're like, oh my God, everybody's wrong in this, you know, situation, but he murders the guy anyway. Then a bunch of guys show up. And they look at a picture and they look at him and they murder him. And you're like, who the hell are these guys? Earlier in the movie, when they kill the former employee's girlfriend, she says, by the way, if you kill me, I'm part of this like underground movement of dangerous radicals. You never hear about it again. The whole movie, this whole movie plays out. Everything happens the way it's supposed to. And the very end of the movie, these random dudes show up and you're like, oh my God, it's the radicals that you thought were BS. Because even when it's happening, the guy killing her is like, whatever, that's not even a real thing. Like, what do you have? Like five members? Like there's like nothing, right? And they show up at the end and you're like, oh my God, like it's this really cool twist that you had to like, and you recall it from so far early in the movie. And I think that's one of my favorite Park Chan-wook twists. You know, Old Boy one is just kind of gross. Another one I think is I really like the movie Let the Right One In.
Not the
American remake, but the original. And in that one, there is the twist when the boy, I don't remember his name, but I remember the vampire's name is Ellie. Oscar. So Oscar comes in and Ellie is cleaning off, is cleaning herself off, and he sees that she has the scar of a castration. And that changes the whole movie right there in that moment, because, you know, when he, when Oscar asks Ellie to go steady, she says, he says, I'm not a girl. And at that time, you're thinking, I'm not a girl means he's a I'm a vampire. But it literally means I'm not a girl. I am a boy. And you find that out in that moment. And it really is a interesting twist. I mean, the book really dives into it and it's really messed up. The movie just kind of touches on it and gives it this really fascinating, interesting twist on the story. The American version, of course, cuts all of that out. There's none of that in there. It's just a straight up boy and a girl. But in the other film, it's the vampire is male, and that's when you find out, is in that very interesting twist moment. And I always thought that was a very fascinating twist that always surprised me, which is no surprise because I'm always surprised.
Because you're always surprised.
One of the most fun twists. I was trying to think of what's a more fun twist, because those are kind of deeper twists. Cabin in the Woods, one of my all-time favorites. The movie's already playing with tropes, and then when Chris Hemsworth comes to his demise by jumping that motorcycle and hitting the invisible barrier, it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the coolest twists in any movie that I've ever watched. I was like, my god, like, this whole movie is not what I thought. This whole movie is not what I thought it was. And then it gets even more twisty when they go down underground, and it's just these people that are putting different horror beasts into this cabin. It's amazing. The whole thing is so twisty and amazing, and I love Cabin in the Woods to death.
It's a good one.
Yeah gets better the more times you watch it too, in my opinion.
All right. And then I try to think of what is kind of a weird twist that doesn't make sense when you think about it. There's lots of them, but one that a lot of people really, really like is Book of Eli, where
that
they gave him sight and he's got the Braille Bible with him. And that's like the big reveal. The camera pulls up and you see the Braille on it. I looked it up, and a Braille Bible has 37 volumes because Braille is huge.
Yeah, it's not accurate.
Yeah, so there's a very interesting spoiler that is kind of goofy when you dig into it. So I tried to just look at a whole bunch of different types of spoilers, whether it's, you know, classic, some ones that like mean a little bit more to me or really took me by hold, and then, you know, some goofy ones and some fun ones, and that's it. I just tried to come in with a whole array of spoiler goodies for you guys.
You did. You came in with a smorgasbord.
Smattering.
So.
Yeah.
JC, thank you so much. We could talk to you all day about spoilers. This was amazing.
Sure.
JC, where can people find you? Where can they follow you on social media and hear more of your awesome thoughts on film?
Yeah. So I have a podcast. It's called Screen Fix. It is where we will fix a recent film. We just got a pretty cool thing. The website Screen Rant just grabbed us and put us in an article, which was interesting.
Oh, that's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah, like an unsolicited article. So that's been fun. So now of course I'm on my Chartable account. Now I'm showing up in like Zimbabwe and Chile, and suddenly I'm in Norway and all these kind of things, which is pretty cool. Like, I don't know how, you know, I'm like the number one podcast in like the Isle of Man. I don't know if that makes sense, if that's a really great accomplishment or not. But yeah, that's been happening. So yeah, check it out. Screen Fix Podcast. I have an episode that I believe is dropping tomorrow. And we're going to be doing all kinds of movies coming up. We kind of had a slowdown in production during COVID, and a couple other things happen, and you know, it's basically just a one-man show. But we're ramping up production. There's a lot of movies coming out now this summer. This summer is a cavalcade, an embarrassment of riches. Lots of stuff coming out this summer. Totally excited, and maybe, just maybe, one of you three can come on and talk about one of those movies. What do you guys think?
I think that's awesome.
You know, we love the show, so
Yes, make it happen. Make it happen. We'll make it happen.
Love it. JC, thank you so much for being here. We can't thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. It took a lot of coffee.
Always.
You can't tell by the speed of which words coming out of my mouth. I can't even, I'm thinking, I'm speaking faster than I'm thinking. All right. Anyways, you guys, congratulations again. Fantastic show. Love it. You guys are the best. Keep it going.
Aww.
And yeah, spoiler.
Thank
peace.
You.
Keep spoiling. Keep we will. Spoiling.
Keep spoiling. I love it. It's our motto.
Keep spoiling, spoiling, spoiling.
All right. Thanks, man.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Hi, Kristen.
I miss you guys. Hi.
We miss you.
Oh, my God.
Great to see you.
Losing it. So excited.
Why don't you tell us your thoughts on spoilers in film and what film or films came to mind?
I am rarely a person who does not who needs to have a film not spoiled in order to enjoy it. Like, I'm totally fine with knowing what happens at the end of a movie. It's not going to take away from me, because a lot of times I'm not just falling into a movie because I'm looking at it analytically. I'm looking at camera angles and pacing and all these other things that are always keeping me like a certain level above the story anyways. So if I know the end of it, it's not going to change all the stuff I'm reading in the middle, is what I want to say. But I do have to say that going into certain screenings and not knowing what was happening or how it was going to end, sometimes it is a little bit exciting. And I think of the ones that were just really, really, really secret and everybody kept it so tight that no one knew what was happening. And I think that my absolute favorite one for this, honestly, I was rolling and rolling and rolling through my head, but my favorite has still got to be Get Out. And seeing that in a theater, a very diverse theater, and seeing the complete tonal shift of the audience.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. I don't think I've ever had such a good surprise that touched on so many even personal aspects of my life, of people being like, oh, these guys are kind of cringy. Oh, this is way worse. Oh no, this is truly horrible. Oh God, everyone knows the cops are bad now. It was just so amazing. Even to the last second when that car pulls up, he jumps out of the TSA agent to the very last second. It was just, you were just surprised, but you were thrilled and you were entertained and you were happy with the surprises too, in ways that you were not expecting to be, because everyone was expecting it to close in the most traditional way when they saw that car pull up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, bam, no, Jordan Peele wanted you to smile on your way home. Good for you. Yeah.
It's funny that you brought up Get Out, because I just saw it like 3 days ago. Not for the first time.
For the first time?
No. For like the second or third. But I was watching it because I was just like, I just want to watch a movie. I'll watch Get Out, because like somebody mentioned it to me. And I was just like, I thought of that moment when the car pulls up at the end, and you can see it on Allison Williams' face. She's like, yes. And then it's not who she thinks it is. It's so awesome.
It is. And it really does go back to also just loving being in a theater, because, you know, I've certainly like seen it again at home, but there was really just nothing. Me being surprised at home is very different than being in an entire crowd of like 100 people being surprised at the same time and hearing all of our vocal inflections, feeling everyone tense in their seat, feeling everybody moving forward and like leaning on the edge together. There is something weirdly communal about everybody being surprised at the same time that I really enjoy. But I also love already knowing the ending and watching other people watch movies really badly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's a lot of fun.
It is. We've been doing movie nights at our house to, you know, bond, especially during the pandemic and such. And I got to introduce both of my roommates to the movie Dope, because they hadn't seen it. And my roommates are definitely younger than me, and they're both Black males. And I was really excited because like halfway through the movie, they were like, oh no, and he's never going to get into Harvard. And how's he going to do And then at every new twist in the story, him actually trying to sell the drugs, the Bitcoin, the concert that he couldn't remember, every single one, they were like, what? What? Whoa! Oh! Right up until he blackmailed the dude at the end, they were like, yeah! And it was so great because I knew these really rewarding moments were coming, and like waiting for their faces to change when they saw the reward was just, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. So it's good to be surprised, but it's even better when you're the one holding on to it. It's like that that Saturday Night Live sketch of that woman that like can't keep a secret. yes. That was me sitting on the couch.
You're like, I know it's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wait.
Exactly. And that's one of my favorite things about, again, knowing what's happening, but also being excited for someone to share this with you. And also, it's like almost getting it halfway again. Because you know what's coming, but you also get to relive it through the person that's sitting next to you. And being able to share something like that, I think it's like super special. And it's better to share something where there's a really great twist than something that I just like loved, but is really straightforward. I'd way rather, whenever possible, be able to sit next to somebody when they're watching something where I was surprised. So I can also be like, are they also surprised, or was I maybe like an idiot that didn't know all this was coming? Because have you guys ever had that moment where like you're like, oh, they're going to love this surprise, and then you watch it with the person, the person's like, oh, I know what's about to happen, and they tell you, and you're like, how did I not see that the first time?
Yeah. Womp womp.
Yeah, so I think that you guys all do something really, really special here in just being honest and forthcoming and just like really being able to share with people how much, you know, we enjoy the movie and not having to hold back in sharing what you love at any point of the show is a huge thing. And I think it's a bonus, not just the people who are critics who might be looking at this in a completely different way, but it's just really, really special for anyone listening that just wants a really good view of what was awesome and what was maybe not so awesome about a film before they go see it. Like you guys say, it's like spoiler piece, but I think it's like a piece of enhancement, honestly, to be able to listen to you guys.
Wow. Aww. That's such a nice compliment. Thank you.
That is so lovely.
I thought
I've
the
cried
tears
so much on this show already. I'm going to cry more.
Yeah, I thought we had enough tears early in the show. Here we are later in the show. Waterworks are coming.
I know. Thank you.
Going to give myself a high five. Like,
there you go. Yeah, well earned.
Pat yourself on the back. Ooh, yeah.
Screen five.
Everyone very confused at home.
I know, Kristen, I'm usually used to you making me laugh like so hard I want to pee. Now you're making me cry.
Making you cry so hard you want to pee.
It's still liquid. It's fine. Whatever.
Have I ever cried so hard I want to pee? Yes, I have.
And by the way, I was going through episodes that I was on, and I was dying re-listening to the one that was most recent, which was the video, was the PAX, because we're about to come to PAX again. And it was the PAX one that also included The Way Back. And I was like, did I ever watch another Ben Affleck movie again after this episode? I don't think I did. Yeah. So The Way Back is also still in my brain as the apex of Ben Affleck performances. Well,
and Kristen, you want to know the funny part? That is the last movie that I saw in a movie theater.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, no one can ask. I'm really glad that this is only audio, so no one can like watch me dry heaving on this camera right now. That's the thing that you get to hold on to. And also, I made a joke inside of that, and I realized I never followed up on it. Evan, did you actually go get a basketball and try to relive your dreams after seeing it? Or
no. No, a lot of people had, you know, their pandemic time to work on things. That did not. That was not one of them. No.
Did you learn ukulele? What did you do?
No. No, I've been learning Hebrew. That's been my pandemic. I don't know what to call it. Activity.
But not your jump shot.
No. No one needs to see that.
And I still, it's 2 years later, and I still have to go back and see whatever that movie was with, like, was it Alicia Silverstone was also in it? And someone, Keough, and Crazy Chill, and, like,
Riley Keough, The Lodge.
Yes, The Lodge. Now it's on my watch list now to be sad and alone and watch this movie that you guys disagreed about so much that was
we
fantastic.
We did disagree vehemently.
Dave, did you see The Lodge?
I don't think I ever did.
Mm-mm.
No.
Apparently religious and creepy.
Evan and I. Yeah, Evan and I disagreed on it.
Yep. But it was great. It was still a great episode. And I loved, again, like, I love every single time that I get to, like, you know, talk and hang out with you guys. And even though I've moved industries into politics, which really does not allow a lot of time to pop into screening.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah,
like, it's just still really fantastic to... Oh, but you know what? I was a punk and I bought AMC stock over the pandemic, which means I'm in that ridiculous AMC Investors Club that's just basically like AMC Stubbs Plus.
So you're saying
which
we
means
should
that,
hit you
yes,
up for perks.
I got to go to a screening of The Batman like last Wednesday. It is not the same as going to an actual film screening, but it was like really wild because I also got to take my mom and she Aww. Got to attend a screening, which I, you know, was so rote for me at this point. And she was just so excited to see it 2 days earlier than anybody else. And I forgot that was the other thing is, you know, knowing something before other people know,
yeah.
which I think is also great because listening to one of your shows before something comes out and being able to know before the movie even comes out what happens so that you don't waste yep. your opening. You don't waste that Friday night seeing this shitty open, this horrible opening movie. Instead, you just listen to you guys, realized it was horrible. And maybe, like, went to play skee ball. I don't know. You also just save
like
people time. Let's be honest. You also just save people time. You're doing the Lord's work here.
Yeah, we're really saving lives here.
The Lord's work. I like that. I'm going to use that one. What is Spoiler Piece about? Well, we do the Lord's work. So
yeah.
This us three non-religious people do the Lord's work.
Right.
Yes.
Us three non-religious people who now speak fluent, one of them who's now might speak fluent Hebrew. Yes.
Exactly. It's not weird at all. Don't worry about it.
Oh my gosh.
Excuse me, before I forget, because I'm starting to forget. Kristen, we love you. Where can people find you on social media to hear more of your awesome, fabulous ideas and thoughts on film or anything else on politics, on everything?
Don't worry. There's also political films. I think I reviewed exactly one movie last year for Forces of Geek. And let me just be literally on tape saying, I am so sorry, Stefan, as my editor. Like, I know. So sorry, dude. Like, the pandemic affected us all in different ways, and it made me a trash reviewer and reporter and a person who was very bad at actually answering my editor. So sorry. Now you can listen to my apology forever and ever and ever. But you can find me on social media, all social media, at khalbert617, Boston Pride, all day on Twitter and Instagram. And I still like movies, especially if they're political. Thank you. Oh, man, how did I not say that? Boy State. That was a good twist, too. That was... That was a twist because I was like, oh, look, they're not going to grow up to be little Nazis. There are a couple of nice ones up in here. This is fantastic because I was really terrified at the beginning of that movie, guys. I was really, really scared. But luckily, there were some upswings, some silver linings for the youth of today.
Kristen Halbert, always a pleasure. Always a delight.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being
love
here.
Love you guys. And again, happy anniversary and many, many years ahead of either enhancing or ruining the movie experience for others. Hopefully the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gonna go with that. The first one. Yeah. And our last guest of the night is the Lady Wan. The Lady Wan, you can find her at the Lady Wan on Twitter. You can find her on her podcast, Screen Run, and also as a contributor to Binge Movies. And here is what the Lady Wan has to say about films and spoilers.
Before I had seen Citizen Kane, I knew Rosebud was a sled. Media saturation can often rob us of exciting reveals from classic cinema. When we began the second season of my show Screen Run and we settled on the Alien series, I was excited to talk about my first viewing of the original Alien from 1979 since I watched it for the first time in June of 2020. The quarantine vibes were strong and I was shouting for everyone to listen to Ripley. I knew the chestburster was coming and I had seen it time and time again on shows like I Love the 70s and other movie retrospectives. But I had truly no idea that Ash was an android. And the moment his head was knocked off his shoulders, I screamed. I was in awe. I was like, Ian Holm? What? It absolutely blew my mind. And I mean, not that I wasn't already deeply invested in the film, but I was already itching to rewatch it with that knowledge. I'm so glad that I was not aware of that moment and still got to enjoy that like a true first viewing. Congratulations, guys, on 400 episodes. Oh my gosh. Amazing achievement. Kudos to the editing. I know how much that workload is, so amazing job. Love the show. One of my favorite listens time and time again. Always great debates, great content. So huge fan. Thank you so much for having me on when you did. I can't wait to be back sometime. And I'm so glad that I've gotten to know you guys through hashtag film Twitter.
That's it. That's going to do it for us for this special 400th episode of Spoiler Piece Theater. We want to give a huge, giant thank you to all of our special guests. We love all of them. Chris Jensen, Max Coville, Andy Crump, Dee Dee Crimmins, Charlie Nash, JC from ScreenFix, Kristen Halbert, and the Lady Wan from Screen Run. Thank you so much to all of you for joining us. You really, truly made this a very special event. So thank you.
Thank you, everybody. It was so great talking to all of you.
I know. We could have talked for hours and hours to everyone. It was amazing. Sure.
I think Otto might kill us.
Speaking of Otto, Otto Klammer is our amazing, incredible, wonderful editor. Thank you, Otto, for all you do for us week in and week out. You can follow Otto on Instagram at their page, Otto Klammer. You can find Spoiler Piece anywhere you get podcasts. We are all over the place. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can follow us on social media. We're at Spoiler Piece on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. Come join us. Come say hello. Follow us on all of the social media places. Reach out to us. Speaking of reaching out, you can also email us at spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can call us
at 862-21-PIECE.
You can leave us a voicemail message. You can text us. We love hearing from you. What did you think about the spoilers and the films that we talked about? We love to hear your thoughts. We love to hear your feedback. If you like the show, please consider rating and reviewing us. It really helps us out. Get the word out about the show. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. It'll take you to your platform of choice. You can also rate us at Apple Podcasts. That also helps us out tremendously. And if you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon. We put out exclusive weekly episodes for our patrons for $5 a month. This week, though, we are making this special bonus episode free to everyone, and we're talking about The Wicker Man. So we want to give a huge thank you to all our patrons, all our listeners, all of you. Thank you so much for helping us make this show so special and so meaningful. My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. You can follow me on Twitter at Opinioness World and on Instagram and Letterboxd at The Opinioness.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Dave Sees Movies.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of Your 80s Movie Guide to Better Living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon. And that's real as in film reel.
Thank you so much, everyone. And we will see you next time.
Bye.